but the typical Indian of distorted imagination might be a small dark little man, usually clad in rags. That is nonsense. It is quite absurd to say that there is a classical person of any race. For example, John Bull, the typical British cartoon figure, is there such a person? Or Uncle Sam, is there such a person as Uncle Sam? No. People who say, "Oh, he doesn't look like a Tibetan," are just displaying their ignorance of life and life's forces. The 86 average Tibetan of popular Western imagination is of Mongolian origin, but the higher the caste of Tibetan, the whiter and the more European he appears to be. Q. What can you tell us about reincarnation? People write in and say that reincarnation is a thing they really cannot accept. A. What a fantastic thing that is. Reincarnation is or has been taught in most religions. For an illustration, let me remind you that the original teachings of Christ are very, very different from the teachings of the present. Things are changing. Often the Vatican will issue an edict changing an interpretation. A person who has been a saint for centuries is no longer a saint. Dogma which has been accepted for centuries becomes changed overnight by papal edict. The same thing happens in the case of reincarnation. Christ taught reincarnation. He taught that people came back time after time and then went back to the place where in my Father's house there are many mansions. But the priests round about the year 60 decided to alter the teachings of Christ, and they found that it was not wise to teach reincarnation because people would have a jolly good time in one life thinking they would pay for it in the next life, in the comfortable distant future. So in the Christian belief reincarnation was dropped. The original documents, the Dead Sea Scrolls and all that type of thing teach reincarnation. But isn't it amusing that a non-Christian, should have to teach the Christian belief to Christians? Many religions believe that people have to come to this earth, as children return to school time after time. Children first go to the infants class, then at the end of that term they go home for recreation. At the end of the recreation they are born to the school life again. If they have done well enough in their previous term they come back to a higher grade. Then, when they have continued successfully for that term, they die to the school life and return home again, going back to school after the suitable holidays. So they go on like that, returning to school until the end of the school career. At the end of each successive term they return home, only to go back to school in a higher grade until they have progressed through. 87. The school, or, as we have to point out, life. Then they return home to come back to school no more, or come back to earth no more. Q. I have here a French magazine. It prints the information that you are a plumber. It says that you have been a plumber all your life. What about that? A. So we get back to this plumber business again, eh? Well, I wish I could charge the going rate for plumbers. I could do quite well on that money. But no, I repeat, I'm not a plumber, I have never been a plumber, and, well, how can they possibly say that I am now living as a plumber when actor ally I'm either bedridden or confined to a wheelchair? That just shows how press reports are frightfully inaccurate. Q. People say that you are very rich, that you live in absolute luxury. A. Just look about you. Do you think this is luxury? Did you not say that the floor is cold and I should have some carpet on? There is no carpet on my floor, Mr. Telly, and, well, on the subject, I do not even have a television set nor do I have a car. Is that luxury? It is very, very far from luxury. But I will give you a definite answer. No, I do not live in luxury. No, I do not have a big income as you seem to imagine, or, let me be fair to you, as some of your colleagues seem to imagine. To start with, some publishers in England take as much as 50% from my small royalties before I get anything. Then, of course, there are agents' fees. Incidentally, the agents' fees are an investment because my agent, Mr. Stanley Knight, saves me an awful lot of work. He keeps me on the right path. If a book is published in a different country, there may be two sets of agents' fees, and then there is Dax. In addition, of course, there are all manner of expenses connected with book writing, typewriter, typing, copying, and all the rest of it. If the complaint is that I live in this particular apartment building, well, let me tell you this, it is cheaper living here than in many other apartment buildings. There are many advantages to living in a place such as this. I have no car, as I told you, for the simple reason that I cannot afford one, but one exceptionally good advantage in being here is that there are doormen, people who keep away unwanted, uninvited. 88. Guests. People come here and unless they can produce some conclusive evidence that I am willing to see them, they are just told, no, no admittance, and to me that is worth quite a lot of money. But if you really want to know what I do with the small amount of money I get, I will tell you, I do research. I am doing research into the matter of the human aura. All humans have an aura around the body. There is no point in going into details here because all that is written about in considerable detail in my book You Forever. If people could photograph the human aura, they could tell in advance about illnesses which were likely to affect this physical body, tell in advance while the illness was preventable or curable. You see, illness shows in the colors of the aura long before it manifests itself in the physical body. Research, equipment, costs a lot of money, and because I spend so much on research, I have little indeed left for myself. Sometimes, not even enough for medical necessities. By the way, let me just interject my own remarks here for the moment, apart from questions. I cannot understand why all these personal and impertinent questions are asked. I write true books, and it does not mean that because a reader pays a few cents for a book he has the right to inquire into my private life. Why should I not write to some of my readers and ask how much money they make and what they do with it? And why should I not ask about their sex life? Do you think they would answer that? But no matter. Let us get on with these questions and answers because I have already told you I will answer some more. Q, you say you are a monk. Then why are you living with two women? A, now that really is an utterly absurd question. Why shouldn't I live with two women? Doesn't the Pope, for instance, have women around him? He does, you know. He has a housekeeper for one. But anyway, why not say that I live with four females? Two of the females are Siamese cat ladies and Rhea One ladies they are, too. But I have already made it clear about my sex life, or, to be more precise, my lack of sex life, so there is no point in going further into that except to point out that. 89. Even Gandhi had women attendants. Christ had women about him. And if we are to believe the Bible, Christ even mixed with prostitutes. So what is wrong in mixing with women? They are humans, aren't they? You will find that in Tibet some monks were even married and their wives lived in the lamasseries. No, I cannot help pondering upon the reason for such a stupid question. Q, why did you come to Canada? The press in England said you had gone to your Canadian hideout. Did you come here just to hide? A. Why did I come to Canada? Wa said, why did Lobsang Rampa live in Timbuktu? After all, why do people live in Canada? Is there anything wrong with the place? Is it a crime to live here? The answer is that I live in Canada for probably the same reason as you do. I live here because I want to live here. I have taken out Canadian citizenship and now I am a full citizen of this Canada. Q. Why are you so antisocial? Why do you live like a hermit? Why don't you meet people? Are you afraid, or something? A, you know, I would love to stop here and have a jolly good laugh. But time is pressing, so let us get on with a sensible answer to a foolish question. I live as a hermit because I am utterly sick and tired of senseless questions and senseless people asking senseless questions. I have had people visit me and I have been absolutely sickened by their selfishness. They say, oh, what you can do for me. I want you to do this, I want you to do that. People rarely ask what they can do for me. And another thing, before I learned by hard bitter experience, I did see a few people, But many of them went away from me and completely misreported everything that had happened. Some tried to make money out of the press and they went along and sold misinformation for quite a packet of money. Now I have decided that there is no reason why I should pander to the senseless curiosity of people. I'm not a freak in a cage, nor am I a sideshow attraction in a circus. So I do not and I will not see people. I am not afraid to meet people. Why should I be? I have 90. Told all there is to be told in my books. But then again, why should I meet people if I don't want to? Do you, Mr. Telly, meet everyone who thinks they can just drop in and waste your time? Why should I meet people when so many are just trying to criticize me or trying to get something for nothing? It seems to be thought that because I write books which people can buy for a few cents, that I have to put myself up as a sort of Aunt Sally and answer any fool question, or see any mentally bereft person who can manage to totter to my door. Let me state finally that people do not have a right of access to see me, they do not have a right to come and see me whenever they think they will. I must tell you this, it has overtones of humor to it. When I lived in a different apartment here, I had a man come to my door after midnight. He was from a Middle Eastern country and he arrived with quite a few suitcases. He came to the door and when it was opened he tried to get inside, saying, "I have come to live with you as your son." Well, that's something, eh? Eventually we got rid of him, but I saw him much later in the morning, and he went away apparently satisfied. Some months after I received a blackmail demand for $2,000 and a very savage demand that I should embrace and write about some peculiar religion that I had never even heard of before. He was very insistent that I should write books in praise of that religion. This was quite fantastic to me, but serious to him, and I have never been easily intimidated so. Unfortunately for the man concerned, he quite accidentally enclosed an indication of his address on about his sixth letter to me. The first letters were quite anonymous. Anyway, I got in touch with the U.S. Postal Inspection Department and with the police of the relevant area. The gentleman concerned was living in the USA illegally. He is not there now. While still on the subject, I can tell you this. I have had people who have come to me in the greatest distress and have written to me claiming that the most dreadful things were going to happen to them and only I could save them. So, out of compassion, I have agreed to see them. One woman, M.D. 91. Ateli wanted to jump in bed with me, an offer which I refused, and so incurred her enmity. She has ever since been trying to harm me. But others said they invented the whole thing because they knew that without very good reason I would not see them. Because of treachery of this nature I do not see people anymore. Q, you have a business in England making touchstones and phonograph records. How do you say that you are poor when you have these business interests which bring you in money? A, no. I do not have a business in England or anywhere else in the world. I have no business interests of any sort except in writing my books and Mr. Knight, my wonderfully reliable agent, looks after that business for me. But of course there are touchstones being made, and I designed them, but it is not my business and I am no part of the business. Q, the press here, publishes a letter which they say is from the Dalai Lama and saying that you are a fake. What do you say about that? A. The press made much of a purported statement by some secretary employed by the Dalai Lama to the effect that I was not genuine, but the Dalai Lama himself has never said such a thing, nor has his secretary said I am not genuine. The letter, for example, said he places no credence, which is a horse of another color. But let us look at this matter. Anyone with even the meanest intelligence would know that people in high places have quite a number of secretaries. Leaders of countries have several secretaries, and sometimes these secretaries have limited authority to write what they consider to be fit because their employers do not have time to deal with all the correspondence themselves. So if a fellow has a personal dislike, then he gets a wonderful opportunity to vent his spite on the object of his dislike and, in this particular case, I state absolutely that there is a secretary to the Dalai Lama who has no liking for me at all. And so this secretary makes remarks about "we place no credence," which is quite a different thing from what the press try to convey. By the way, you have just told me yourself that there were two llamas discussing the Rampa affair and one llama was 92. Supposed to be very opposed to me and the other was absolutely fervid in his support. Yet the press, of course, take the side of the opposition. Why? There is a very well-known American author who went to see the Dalai Lama in India, and when Mr. B. came back he sent me a special message to the effect that when Tibet was free again the Dalai Lama would gladly welcome me to the Potala. No, do not place words in the mouth of the Dalai Lama which he has not uttered. Instead, regard the backstairs secretaries as suspects. You don't know their motives? Perhaps I do. Once again I will make another remark which doesn't, so far, come in your questions, but I gather you have a whole bunch of the wretched things. The press seem to be very confused about my identity. But why? Look at some well-known cases: who was Shakespeare? Who was Bacon? Who was Moses? I mention these merely because they are so well-known, and again, just to show how remarkable some press statements are. I have already mentioned a press statement about Christ going to Japan after he ran out on his brother. Well, what do you think about all that? Do you believe all this? It is in the press, you know. But if one is to believe all the muck the press publish about me, well, why not believe all muck published about everyone? Q, how old are you? Why do you refuse to give your age? A, but I do refuse to give my age. It's nothing to do with anyone else. My age, which is far more than you would believe, does not affect my book writing. It doesn't add any proof to anything, and in any case I do not want to give any proof because I just couldn't care less about pleasing the press. The ordinary decent people who read my books do believe me, but as is always the case, an extremely noisy minority make a commotion quite impossible to credit unless one is the victim. But the answer is, no, I will not give my age, and the sole reason is because I do not want to. 93. Chapter 6. It was very tiring answering these questions. The old man lay there propped up on his bed and Mr. Telly was sitting on the foot of the bed shuffling a great sheaf of papers, and all the time he was continually fishing fresh scraps of paper out of his pocket, papers with fresh questions. Ever and anon inspiration would strike him and he would grab a pencil and write out yet another question. When he was not writing out questions, Mr. Telly was doodling. He was a great doodler, and his doodles were most revealing. "Well, come on then, let's get on with these questions," said the old man. "What's the next one? Q, if you are so strong and know so much, why can't you cure your illness? A. Now that really is the depth of absurdity. Let me tell you something. 15 years ago I went to one of the most famous London hospitals. There I was very carefully examined, and the opinion was made that I had not more than 6 months of life remaining. I then went to another equally famous London hospital. They confirmed the estimate of the first, and that was more than 15 years ago. 2.5 years ago in Canada I was told that I had not more than 2 or 3 months of life left. 2.5 years ago that forecast was made. Let me tell you something which may not have occurred to you: all the press persecution is not helping my health in any way, but even the greatest of faith healing will not grow an arm or a leg which has been amputated. Not even the greatest faith or medical science can grow a lung which has been removed. So whatever silly sort of person asked a fool question like that? 94. Q. The French press say that you probably copied Madame Blavatsky. Did you? Or if you did not copy her, then you must have copied Alexandra David Neal. Is that correct? A. This really does seem to be a comic session, doesn't it? No, I have not copied anyone. I have no books of reference. I have never read any of the works of Madame Blavatsky nor any of the works of this Alexandra David Neal. I write exclusively from my own personal knowledge and experience, and that seems to be entirely adequate. But why do you not read Madame Blavatsky and David Neal and see if my books are similar? If they are, then do please come and tell me because I shall be most interested. Q. Here is a report from a French newspaper in which they say you were hired by Hitler to go to Tibet to learn all you could. Then you could return to counsel Hitler on how to win the war. A. Well, do you seriously think I am going to answer a question like that? I will, though, although you do seem to have been combing the mental homes to find the most crazy people to ask the most crazy questions. No, I have never been hired by Hitler to go to Tibet. If you want to know the truth, the real truth, and nothing but the truth, then read all my books which are in print, then you will know the truth. Q. Will you tell us some of the questions you are asked? Reincarnation, for instance, people don't understand it. Transmigration, people don't understand that either. So will you answer questions about that? A. Well, I don't know what else there is to tell you. I have told you that if you read all my books you will know all this stuff, that's what my books are about. If people read my books they will know about transmigration, they will know about reincarnation, they will know about the aura. Q. Well, won't you give us just one thing about changing bodies? What is it like? A. I'll tell you what I will do, I will let you have an extract from the Rampa story. You can print it and then you will get the actual incident recounted for you. Q. Why have you kept things concealed so much about A? 95. Changeover and all that? Why not come out into the open about it? A. Wait a minute. Now here is an extract from the Third Eye which was copyrighted in 1956. This particular extract I will pass over to you. Perhaps you will be kind enough to publish the statement in full and then it will clearly be understood that even since 1956 I have been making things open and I have not been concealing things. Q. But why is your name now Rampa? What did you change it for? A. You'd be surprised. I went to South America, to Uruguay as a matter of fact, and they seemed not to believe it possible for a person to have two names, a pen name and an identity name, so they would not let me have mail which came for one name. They told me that I had to stick to one name, so I made a legal deed of name change, a change made specific color according to law. It is a perfectly legal thing and my only name now is Tuesday Lobsang Rampa. Yes, you can have a copy of the legal deed and you can publish it. Oh. You don't mean to say you've got another load of questions there. I thought we'd got rid of all this lot. But I do want to tell you that we'd better get these questions settled here and now because after this I am not prepared to answer any more questions, so if people do not want to believe, well, let them disbelieve. It is like taking a horse to the water. You can take a horse to the water but you cannot make him drink. You can give a person absolute irrefutable proof but you cannot make him believe if he doesn't want to believe or if he's got a closed mind. Well, what's the next question? Q. Many people ask serious questions and they don't get any answers. They ask about this business of transmigration. Well, actually, what is it? How is it done? A. But good gracious me. I have gone into this so much that I am thoroughly sick of the whole thing. It is all given in my books, you know, and it is incredible to me that you cannot get down to it and read the books. That is why they are written. But what is transmigration? Well, it is a cross-migrate. It just means that one soul leaves one body and takes over another body which has just at 96 that same instant been vacated by its previous occupant. There is nothing at all difficult in it. It is done very frequently. But let us start a bit further back. If we are to believe in a God or in a supreme being of any kind then we must believe in the essential goodness, the essential furnish of such a being. Now if we are to believe that, and I am only putting it like this because you are so appallingly ignorant of the whole thing, then surely we have a right to expect that a beneficent God will be fair to all, so why should a person be born to a very high state and have everything he wants, have no troubles, no persecution from the press, no hatred, and another person of about the same age is born perhaps with serious illness and in poverty, and at the same time press hoodlums persecute him if he looks the wrong way or something? They both live and they both die, one to acclaim, one to sorrow. If we are to believe in a just God, that cannot be, and in any case, there are definite evidences, established cases, where bodies have been switched over. You see, bodies are just vehicles. The Western science is now groping towards the truth which the Easterner has known for centuries. Man is a vehicle of a higher being, man is controlled by a soul or over self, call it what you like. Let us call it a soul, because unless you have studied this a bit you could be led astray. I think you have been led astray by being a member of the press, but that is another thing altogether. However, when a person is in the soul state, he is in a much more glorious state, a state where he cannot suffer pain or suffer from vindictive persecution. But it may be necessary for him to learn something, and the only way to learn, really, is by a certain amount of suffering. Suffering can be overdone. From my own experience I say that it can be overdone. But this soul selects a body to occupy when it comes down to this earth. If you want to go touring, then you select a car which will give you ample power and will carry you safely through possibly the backwoods. You will have a car which is proved to be of a reliable type. You want a good plodding workhorse of a car. Or if you want to go in for racing, you will have a much more temperamental affair, for race cars are temperamental indeed. But just as you would select a car for the conditions you have in mind and for 97. The things you want to do, so the soul selects a body which will give him the range of experience he has to endure or surmount. Now when one is on the other side of life, much can be seen of probabilities on this earth. It is much the same as one can be on the ground in a little wood with trees all around you. You think you are in a vast forest, you can't see very far because you have this wood about you, and perhaps you are circumscribed by a river, or perhaps you may be on a small island. If you are, then that island may be as your entire world, but if you pass over in an aeroplane you think, that mighty forest, well, it is just really a small copse. The island which was your entire world is just a spot in somebody's farm lot. That is how you would see things from the other side of life. Of course, jealous authors and idiotic pressmen are a decided nuisance when one is on this earth, but they will have to go through it themselves in a future life. It might teach them something, and if it doesn't, they will come back time after time until they do learn. But this is taking us away from transmigration. So let us get back to our cars. Let us say you are touring and you have reached some distant place. Circumstances urgently require that you should do something necessitating a special type of vehicle. It might be a race car, it might even be a bulldozer, but the whole point is that you, the soul of the car, get out of your touring car and you, the soul, move over to, what shall we say? A racing car or a bulldozer? Let us say you move over to the bulldozer. You get in the thing, you do certain actions, and the bulldozer bursts into life. You, the soul, make known to the machine that which you need to have done. You steer the vehicle, you pick up all sorts of impressions from it, especially if you drop the thing into a big dip, but you are in much the same position as a soul taking over a different body. Q. Yes. But why should a man want to take over the body of another? That is a thing people ask. Why does one person take over the body of another? A. I thought it was perfectly obvious. I have tried to make it clear enough. But let us take the instance to which you are so obliquely referring. Here we have a person who most desperately needed a body so that he could continue with the task. 98. Which had been set for him by others, a task not at all of his choice, not at all to his liking, but a task set at the insistence of others. His own body, through the cruelty of humans, was in danger of collapse. His own body was too old, too tattered, and too unsatisfactory for the task to be carried out through its assistance. Now let us look at the other body, that was of a person who was heartily sick of life. A very sensitive person whose sensitivities had been beaten down by many unfortunate circumstances in his own life. He was a defeated man, A failure, if you like, but what may seem to be a failure to you was not a failure in his case. He may be the gainer in this, and you, who have tried to impede the task, well, you sure will be the loser.